Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to Fri-yay. Welcome to Fri-yay. You are at the end of the week. That's a Fri-yay. There's a sound effect for that one. Hit it, man. Fri-yay! Fri-yay, the best day of the week, because that means you guys are jumping into a weekend. We're going to get you all the way to go-home time here on a Friday, and we're glad you're with us and pushing the buttons quite ably on the board. JP, how you doing, man?
Doing good, and it's a conference championship weekend, so I'm quite excited.
Sports guy JP is all in.
Yep.
Are you like couching up with popcorn and like sports snacks?
As usual, yeah. that's a weekend routine
that's,
of mine.
That's all right. You're a sports guy. It's what you do. We got a great show lined up for you. So at 3 o'clock today, do not forget, Scott Buttram, the publisher of the Trustful Tribune, will be with us. We got a few things happening around the state that we got to take a look at. And nobody better to provide color commentary on happenings in and around our own state than the good Scott Buttram. So we'll have Scotty on at 3 o'clock. Stand by for that. And then at 3:30 p.m., you know the deal. JP, you just heard him a moment ago. He is a sports guy. Yes, he does have his own sports show on Saturday mornings called Off the Bench on the Ump out of Huntsville. And we're going to do a little JP on sports, get his take on what's just happened recently and where we're headed next. To include, I'm sure Alabama's probably sneaking into the playoffs or something crazy like that. But anyway, JP on sports, 3:30 today. And then I still got a triple dipper just filled up with stuff. So hit it, man.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. So coming out the gate, first thing we're going to do is a batch of home fries. That's right, sizzle them up. We're going to cook up a batch of home fries, take a look at some things happening right here in and around and amongst us in our own region. Home fries, stuff that you can relate to right here at home. Number two, I'm looking north to the Daniel Penny trial. Right now, going on in New York City, evidence has been presented, closing arguments have been made, and we are now looking at a potential hung jury. But what's going on with Good Samaritans on trial? That's what I'm going to talk about. Good Samaritans on trial. Stand by for that one coming up, number two on the Triple Dipper. And then number three, on the world stage. So we're going to go from home, we're going to go to national, and then we're going to talk about what's happening on the international, because y'all, I'm telling you, there are things happening on the international world stage with world leaders that you look at and go, wait just a minute, who did what? Like, did you know that France just lost their prime minister? Did you know that the president of South Korea is being asked to step down for declaring martial law? All these things are happening. And it's an amazing thing to watch as the world gets a little more unstable in and around and amongst us. So we'll talk about that on the world stage, number three on the Triple Dipper. All right, well, let me jump on over here to the opening monologue. As always, the opening monologue, the Right Side Way monologue, we call it, sponsored for you by attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. We'll tell you more about Stan here in a minute, but yes, he is indeed Stan McDonald, partner at Wilmer & Lee in Huntsville, sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue. So here's the thing. We are in the throes of the nomination and confirmation process for the incoming Trump administration, right? We are. By and large, I'm pretty personally satisfied with the pool of candidates for all the major positions that have been tapped this far. I haven't tracked all of them. I don't know any of them personally, but what I can see, I like. And one of the things that I see is that nowhere in the mix has President-elect Trump bragged that he is proud to nominate any single one of them because they are breaking a glass ceiling. I got news, man. Glass ceilings are not all they're cracked up to be. I mean, if it just so happens that the best person for the job just so happens to be the first woman, the first black man, the first veteran, the first purple dude from the dark side of the moon, great. But they should never be tapped for any position of leadership because of their skin color, their lifestyle, their gender, never. That is antithetical to what we refer to as meritocracy, the idea that someone has earned it, has merit, not just they have skin color. What's funny is that Trump has indeed picked a highly qualified and highly diverse group of folks. I'm talking black, white, first-generation Americans, male, female, you name it. And they're all highly qualified. And the liberals don't know what to do with that because he didn't give them their intersectionalities. He didn't define them in advance. He didn't say, I will pick the next blank for this position. And oh, by the way, they'll have to be qualified too. Yeah, this has been big. The liberals need to have their intersectionalities. They want the groups labeled all in advance. That's how this works, right? No. Well, if you're more into glass ceilings getting cracked than you are into running the country, then yeah, it would be. But most of us, we just want the best candidate based on merit, skill, acumen, experience. Now, look, I've had some experiences at hiring and firing over the years. One of the lessons that I learned the hard way caused me to coin a phrase that I will hire the person before I'll hire the resume. But by saying that, I'm not talking about their external qualities. I'm referring to the strength of their character. Because once I'm satisfied that the person is the kind of person that brings true value to the team, then I go next into their actual qualifications. But I don't look at things like just skin color or just gender. That's not meritocracy. The things that are on the resume, like skills or education or experience, those are indeed important and you need to have them. And they actually should kind of weigh heavy in the decision-making process and not just be secondary to the intersectionalities that the liberal left wants all the time. So to put it in HR terms, the background check comes first and the resume comes next. It's the basics of merit-based employment, that you hire someone not on their appearance, or how it makes your company look to outsiders, or whether the Human Rights Campaign gave you a high enough score on their LGBTQ annex. But what makes your organization the most effective, that's the word, effective is what it's supposed to be doing when you hire people. If we don't demand that our government return to the idea of finding the best person for the job, then we will continue to receive mediocrity and not meritocracy. It's an actual disaster. I had an experience once that galvanized me into the belief that a person should never be given a position that they have no right or capability to perform. On my second deployment in the global war on terror, this time to Baghdad, I had my team augmented with several guys that I had never worked with before. One of them seemed real solid, seemed like he knew his stuff. It was his second deployment as well. He jumped right in during what I quickly discovered was just a honeymoon period. As time went on, though, he became more and more disruptive, belligerent even. His communications became very short. It came to a head when he actually bucked my authority during a very dicey combat operation late one night in central Baghdad. And I wrote him up. A counseling statement, for the record, to establish what I was concerned would need to be a paper trail. Apparently it didn't sit well with him. His behavior did not change. In fact, it got worse. In the coming weeks, I finally took steps and had him relieved of duty in the war zone. And I sent him packing with his bags and baggage back to our battalion headquarters. And that's when I began to get the word from others that, oh, by the way, this wasn't the first time he'd been kicked off of a team.
What?
Yeah, because there was no record for it. There was no record for unwitting future bosses like me to see. It turns out this guy had been relieved of duty on his team in Afghanistan. So In my wake, I submitted all the counseling statements, and then I prepared to write his evaluation report because technically he had been under my rating scheme long enough to do so. But I was told not to do it, that it would be done by someone else, and I was not satisfied with that answer, so I submitted a memorandum for record of all the information that I would have included had I been allowed to write it. I learned that a few weeks later, he was given his own team in another part of the area of operations. By the end of the tour, his new team couldn't stand him, and he refused to come to their own award ceremony when they received their commendations and medals for time in the war zone. Look, it was that singular experience. I tell you that story because that singular experience convinced me to never allow myself to be forced into hiring somebody simply because of some external qualification. When someone's allowed to have a position of responsibility without the truth of their character or their abilities or their actual experiences being at the forefront, well, everybody loses. That guy, he was on my team creating havoc in the war zone because someone in his past saw fit to just let it ride. Let future bosses deal with it. And that guy got his own team after being dismissed from two others simply because someone didn't want to deal with it. And that is the antithesis of merit-based hiring. Well, the Biden administration took poor hiring practices to entirely new levels, though. In a desperate effort to break every perceived glass ceiling, to merely check off the blocks of the perceived outward intersectionalities, to advance the liberal cause of diversity, equity, and inclusion, the Biden administration saddled the American people with one questionable hire after another. I mean, we now have the first Supreme Court justice who was advanced by the Biden team solely on the first hurdle being that she was a black woman. I mean, she's a jurist. She's got a strong resume. I'm sure she's a smart person, even though she can't define a woman. But do we know for a fact that she was the best candidate for the job when everybody else who is not a black woman was automatically not even considered? How about this? We have a press secretary. She draws the ire of the White House press corps daily, reading her pre-planned responses and treating members of the press dismissively, even rudely. So much so that one member of the press corps went on a national broadcast to point out how rude and ill-equipped she is, and that he had been openly discriminated against for daring to ask hard questions. But hey, she broke a glass ceiling. First ever openly gay black female press secretary. Whoop, whoop. How's that working out for us? Or how about the now former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Spent Fuel and Waste Disposition in the Office of Nuclear Energy? There's a title. With a top secret clearance, mind you. He crowed to the world at large how he had been proud to have been the breaker of all the glass ceilings of all glass ceilings as the first non-binary cross-dressing Deputy Assistant Secretary of anything, because certainly that's what makes him good for the job. Well, he was brought up on felony charges for theft and grand larceny, and that could net him 15 years in prison. Never mind that his far too open book life should have been disqualifying for a position of clearance or any position of any kind in government. With his noted positions out there in the world on keeping information from the parents of children in the school he used to work in, or his lecture series on gay kink and fetish, and the constant parade of photos of himself wearing outlandish garb, even bondage gear, and he got a top secret clearance? Look, these are the kind of things that happen when a hiring process is more concerned with breaking glass ceilings than they are with creating an effective organization. It's one thing to be an advocate for equal pay for women and for equal work done. It's important that handicapped individuals are not excluded from positions they can otherwise be reasonably accommodated to handle. No one should ever be told that they cannot have a job because of their skin color or their religion, and I get all that and I approve. But when we move past that point and we flip the script and we say that hiring is now based on whether you have enough people on the roll of a certain skin color, or that your hiring is tainted by a need to be seen as having enough LGBTQ staffers, especially when all else about the person's past is disregarded in order to bring their focus to the outward intersectionalities? All right. At that point, merit-based hiring is gone. We are no longer at that point hiring the best candidates. We have allowed DEI then to go from diversity, equity, and inclusion to actually stand for destruction, exhaustion, and implosion. The Trump administration is moving us away from trying to find the next glass ceiling to break. Outstanding. Because if you get down to it, glass ceilings, well, they're really not all they're cracked up to be. That's a wrap for The Right Side Way. Yeah, I mean, I didn't even get into all the hires. I mean, like the dude that wears a dress and advocates for LGBTQ treatments on, or excuse me, transgender treatments on minors. I mean, I could go right down the line and all the people that kept their jobs when they screwed up in the Biden administration. I just look at it and think, okay, somewhere along the line, meritocracy needs to apply because you're a public servant, and yet all you're doing is serving your intersectionality needs. DEI needs a DIE, that's what I say. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, we're going to be jumping in on some topics. I think this is going to be a fascinating show. But I got to tell you, we're watching very closely right now about the Daniel Penny case. And I'll get back to that in a minute. Speaking of legal matters, I told you right before the break that the Daily Right Side Way monologue is brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald. He's a partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee up in Huntsville. So Stan McDonald, partner at Wilmer & Lee, 30-year veteran, y'all, of the practice of law in North Alabama. I mean, Stan will advocate and fight for your legal needs and your rights, and he's been also, by the way, been an absolute warrior on what I would call the social, cultural, and governmental issues that are near and dear to the Right Side Ruffian community. Attorney Stan McDonald, he's represented his clients in literally thousands of real estate transactions. He knows how to represent you in all levels of courts in the state and federal. When Stan McDonald's on your side, you're going to have no greater friend. Your adversaries will have no greater foe. So attorney Stan McDonald at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee is an America First family man. He's an attorney who's vigilant for those he represents. Here's how you contact him. And I suggest if you need something in the Huntsville area, especially, you should. Stan McDonald, 256-479-3020. That's Stan McDonald, partner at Wilmer & Lee, 256-479-3020. All right, JP, you ready? No representation made. The quality legal service be informed with the quality legal service informed other lawyers. Did that sound, could you understand it? Did I get it all out?
Bravo.
Nice. Okay. Hey, listen, speaking of legal stuff, though, like I said, Daniel Penny, we're watching this very closely. Part of our show today is going to be on Good Samaritans on Trial. I want to talk about, I mean, in that Good Samaritans on Trial segment, we're going to talk about the Castle Doctrine. We're going to talk about the Stand Your Ground law that Alabama has and other states that actually have something similar. We're going to talk about why Daniel Penny is even on trial at all. And oh, by the way, what about like Daniel Perry, the Army Sergeant out in Texas? Or how about Kyle Rittenhouse up in Wisconsin? Yeah, Good Samaritans on Trial. We're going to cover all that in Dipper number two for the day. It's just about probably about 3:15-ish. So stand by for that one. We're watching right now, though. Quick update. It appears that the jury is deadlocked in the Daniel Penny trial in New York. And I'll just tell you very quickly what that can mean. It doesn't necessarily mean it's 50-50. It just means that there are some who are holding out one way or the other. And we don't know if the preponderance of the jurors are leaning towards acquittal or if the preponderance of them are leaning towards finding him guilty. But what they have come back and said is that as for the most significant charge, the maximum charge he's got, which is manslaughter, that as to manslaughter, they are deadlocked. Now, the lesser charges, and we'll have to wait and see how that plays out, but the lesser charges, I don't know if they are what's known as lesser included charges. Usually a lesser included means something that if you get rid of the first one, you're by necessity getting rid of the others because they're stacked together. They're like nested together. A lesser included charge. What's the example? Maybe you have a DUI charge, but part of the lesser included charge is you're also driving without a license. That's you were driving, no license, but they got you because of the DUI, and that's the maximum. So anyway, what I'm saying is I don't know what other charges they're dealing with right now, but as for manslaughter, they appear to be deadlocked. What is that going to mean? We'll talk about it in more detail later, but what it also could mean, though, is the jurors now having announced their deadlock, they're probably going to be sent back. They're being given what's known as an Allen charge. The judge may direct them to deliberate further. He'll do that usually once or twice. It's kind of like saying, fine, I hear you, but go back and try again. Fine, I hear you still, but go back and try again. And if they can't, the judge will have to declare a mistrial. How does that work? Is he off the hook? What does he do? Well, a mistrial cannot be appealed by the prosecution. It's not an acquittal. It's not a guilty. It means that the prosecutors could decide to retry the case again with a new jury. Or they might just walk away and say, well, we tried. Either way, right now, I'm thinking so far this means good things for Daniel Penny. I mean, I just love a flat-out acquittal. But what I don't want is him going to jail. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We got lots more. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, y'all, I am talking about Alabama. I mean to say, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, we're going to jump into some home fries here momentarily, but I got to tell you, the text lines are indeed open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it, same number for both. Some of y'all already figured that out. And by the way, apparently some of y'all already figured out, too, we're streaming the show live online because we might break a record today. I don't know, but we got hundreds of y'all out there watching us online. We appreciate it very much. So we're available. By the way, if you're ever getting outside the range of our overly broad listening area on radio, you can always find us on what? We got Twitch, Rumble, YouTube, and then we got two X accounts, one for rightside_media and the other one for my personal @SinPhilWilliams. Check them out. And do us a favor, by the way. Y'all have been like really jamming for us on this, but we have goals to grow the company. You have to meet certain thresholds on all these various platforms. So whether it be Twitch or Rumble or YouTube or X or whatever, if you go there, do us the favor of clicking either follow or subscribe or whatever their version is, because that actually gives us more opportunities when we hit certain thresholds. And we are pushing 1,000 for our number on the on YouTube especially. So if you go to YouTube, click subscribe. Thank you very much.
Yep, currently at 753 on YouTube. So,
which, by the way, we've gained 100 in about a week.
Yeah.
So that's great. We're going to keep growing this thing, man. Because when you hit 1,000, YouTube lets you do more stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's where we want to be. All right, so like I said, keeping an eye on the Daniel Penny case. That'll be a whole segment of the show coming up after we get through with Dipper One. And what we're going to do right now, though, is I think it's super important every once in a while to not forget there is news in our own backyard, right? And I don't mean like just, you know, little lackadaisical things and, you know, what happened with the Little League team. I'm talking about there's actual news, things that impact our lives. I'm convinced after 8 years of serving in the Alabama State House that sometimes what comes out of our own state capitol or our own mayor's offices or just local community events, sometimes those things impact our lives way more than what comes out of D.C. So that being said, I like to look around every once in a while, and I get a gathering up of stories that I think are pretty important. I put them together, and I like to call it home fries. So hit me some home fries. Sizzle it. Sizzle up some home fries. There we go, cooking them. All right, so I got a series of stories. Let's walk through some of this, and I'll tell you why I think it's important. Like number one, story here on Yellowhammer News. One of our favorite go-to sites, Yellowhammer 1819, a couple of others really do a great job. Yellowhammer News, Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth, who many people largely believe is going to run for governor in the next term. Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth condemned a bizarre and extreme belief of some on the left who find it acceptable to offer gender-affirming care to minors. Remember yesterday, we spent a whole segment of the show talking about the things that are being done to kids. And a segment of that segment was on the arguments made in the Supreme Court of the United States this very week by, actually it was the Biden administration. The Biden administration is suing the state of Tennessee. The Biden administration is suing the state of Tennessee, desperate to get a law shut down, much like Alabama's, that would prohibit transgender surgeries and treatments on minors. Within the context of that, the ACLU was a big part of it because, you know, the ACLU, civil liberties, that's an important thing. Like, they're no longer there, believe me. The American Civil Liberties Union attorney is a lady who believes she's a man named Chase Strangio. Chase Strangio argued, and this is her comment. I know she has a mustache, but it's a her. Says, these are young people who may have known since they were 2 years old exactly who they are, who suffered for 6 or 7 years before they had any relief. In other words, Chase Strangio went before our Supreme Court of the United States and argued that two-year-olds know that they're transgender and should be allowed to have these medical treatments. It's unbelievable. In fact, one of my favorite moments was Chase Strangio said to the Supreme Court, this was an immutable question. Immutable meaning as a legal matter, it can't be changed. It just is what it is. And if you don't allow it to proceed in the it is what it is mode, then you are violating the natural law in a sense. You're violating their constitutional rights because you are impacting something that is otherwise immutable. At that point, Justice Alito, I believe it was, looked at her and said, so what about the people that detransition and go back to their original biological sex? That does happen, right? To which Chase Strangio agreed that does happen. And the justice said, well, then it's not immutable. Perfect. My point in this is Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth is out front on this saying, here's this about Strangio and all that. He said, this is absolutely insane. He said, I will do everything in my power to stop this and to protect children from these sick people. This is child abuse, and they deserve prison time for what they're doing to these children. Why is that important to you and I? Because he may be governor. He may be governor. And I would like to know that the governor of the state that I live in, the governor of the state in which I have grandkids, the governor of the state that I, you know, love and have been raised in and served in, I would love to believe that whoever's going to be in the seat as governor, as the chief executive for our state, would say exactly that and would support legislation and even promote legislation and even call for legislation that would do exactly that. So home fries, yeah, that one, when I saw that this morning, I was like, well, good on you. Thank you, Will Ainsworth. Stay in the fight. All right, speaking of in the fight, Tommy Tuberville, War Eagle. I'm looking right at you. I made eye contact.
Hey, I'm a big fan of Senator Tuberville. Maybe not Coach Tuberville, but there you go.
You still fear the thumb. You know you do. All right, so Coach Tuberville, U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville, threw his whole support of his weight behind President Donald Trump's pledge to eliminate taxes on Social Security. Why? Oh, this is huge. So I had not heard this until this morning when I was researching. I don't know how I missed it. But the Trump tax cuts and the other things that we expect to be extended and or put back in place, there are new provisions that they're talking about. And right now, according to AL Daily News, Alabama Daily News, Todd Stacey's place, Alabama Daily News, Dateline today, U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville says he is throwing his full support behind a pledge by Donald Trump to eliminate taxes on Social Security benefits. He points out, he said, Social Security is like a tax anyway. They took it out of your pay back in the day, and they take more out of it before they give it back to you later. He said it's like double taxation. So he said, President Trump says he's going to take the tax off Social Security, which would help tremendously with a lot of people across this country. President Trump vowed to reform the program, stop the double taxation. I look forward to working with him on it. Listen, if that happens, that's going to be a game changer for, I mean, you consider the fact that most folks on Social Security, that is a fixed income. They may have supplemental, who knows, but the reality is there are some who that is their sole source of income. And when you look at the fact that it is then being taxed, I mean, the government took it from you to begin with. It was pre-tax dollars that were taken out of your paycheck back in the day. I know the argument is, well, we got to get taxed from it sometime. No, you actually don't. Like in Alabama, when you reach a certain age, you don't pay property taxes on your residence. When in Alabama, there may be other benefits and there may be tax write-offs and you may get, you know, income tax for disability and that kind of thing. It's not unheard of to let Social Security be seen as an excused issue. Well, right now, what we're hearing is there is a move afoot to try and help the situation with people on fixed income to make sure that they know that they got a tax-free opportunity to take that money home. That would put money back in people's pockets. That would be huge. All right, hey, listen, I got to get some text messages real quick. Jeffro from Indiana reaching back to the monologue says, Phil, it's not been that many years ago that everything was equally as it should be, but then I started hearing about the word equity. Oh, yeah, here we go, which I had only heard of in the real estate business, as much equity as in your property. He said, we need to put that word back in where it belongs in the real estate markets. And how stupid does Mark Cuban have to feel after making all the statements about intelligent women in the Trump administration, which I believe is probably more than was probably in the Biden administration, at least biological women anyway. Ha ha. Jeff Rowe from Indiana has a lot of thinking time when he's driving that truck, doesn't he?
Yeah, Mark Cuban has been pretty quiet. I mean, he's been on some podcasts, whatever, but in terms of politics, he's thrown in the towel.
Didn't he like go back and start deleting his Twitter account?
Yeah, he started deleting old tweets after Kamala lost, so no shame for Mark Cuban.
Are the Mavericks even winning games?
I don't know, actually. I think they're pretty, I mean, they got Luka Doncic, so obviously they're always going to be good as long as they have him. But yeah, it's Mark Cuban is, he's been going through it.
You're dead to me, Cuban. You're dead to me. Roger from Madison says, I miss the good old days when DEI stood for Dale Earnhardt Inc. like it. Bordo from Harvest says, he says, Phil, my brother in Christ, surely we live in the last days. He said, the world would appear to be on fire like never before, but, all caps, we can rest assured that our Redeemer liveth and is able to keep his believers to the day of redemption. God bless your good work. The show is amazing and blessings and a blessing. Thank you, Bordo. Appreciate you as always and agree with everything you just said. Jesus is Lord. James from Bucksville said, German Prime Minister's coalition is fracturing, a snap election set for February. Well, I guess that goes to my third dipper today, the German coalition. Listen, these coalition governments always have trouble anyway, but if the German coalition is fracturing, then that's right up there with France. We've had some major shifts in Italy. We're seeing things happen in South Korea. I mean, the world stage is not real stable right now. We'll cover all that later. Anyway, we'll get back from this next break, and I will tell you about the tech billionaire with contacts to Alabama who just was named to be the head of NASA. That's kind of cool. And then we're going to talk about, is Coleman, Alabama, a racist town? Shoot. No. Anyway, we'll talk about it in more detail. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, I told you we'd update you as things go on. And it's up on both screens right now. And JP just read it out to me. The judge has dismissed the manslaughter charge against Daniel Penny in New York. So the manslaughter in the second degree charge has now been dismissed as to Daniel Penny. The remaining charges, I don't know. I'm waiting to, jury can now consider count two versus Penny, and they're not saying yet on the screen what that charge is.
It's a criminally negligent homicide.
Criminally negligent homicide. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that one is, I don't know the likelihood of that getting passed, but we'll see.
I mean, if they can't get him on manslaughter, can they get him on criminally negligent? I mean,
that's what I'm wondering.
That still requires an element of criminal conduct. So I don't know, man. We'll wait and see, but we're going to keep an eye on it. But I'm going to be doing a whole segment on this whole thing about Good Samaritans being on trial here in just a little while. So stand by for that. Hey, let me get a couple things in before we hit the top of the hour. Don't forget, by the way, coming up right after the top of the hour, our buddy Scott Buttram from the Trustful Tribune will be on to talk about a few things happening in the area. So this is fascinating. So yesterday, Butters said something on the show that I had to go back and get some more details on. So Trump has now tapped the next head of NASA. By the way, don't you want to see NASA? Don't you want to see us get back to where like NASA is like a real thing? Not like some woke center of bureaucracy, but an actual let's go to the moon and to the far reaches of the universe kind of place. Now, some will say, Phil, it's still doing that right now. Okay, great. They also spend a lot of time doing DEI crap and on having seminars on pronouns. They do. Go look it up. However, Trump has now appointed, according to AL.com. Phil, did you go to AL.com? I did. Trump has appointed a tech billionaire who bought a series of space flights from Elon Musk's SpaceX and conducted the first ever private spacewalk. So yeah, Jared Isaacman, and I'd forgotten about this, he actually bought room on a SpaceX flight and did the first ever private citizen spacewalk in the history of ever. He's a billionaire. He's the founder of a credit card processing company. He's been collaborating with Musk on SpaceX for a while. Isaacson is going to replace, get this, Bill Nelson is the head of NASA right now, is 82 years old. Okay. But he's a former Democrat senator from Florida who was nominated by Joe Biden. Yeah, of course he is. Nelson was on the space shuttle back in 1986, right before the Challenger disaster. But Isaacson, by the way, he's got ties to Alabama. This is why it's cool. He's big into the space program. He's big on the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville. He went to space camp there as a kid. In 2022, he donated $10 million to the Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville for the construction of their new Inspiration 4 Skills Training Center. And he's also a member of the Space and Rocket Center Space Camp Hall of Fame. So that's very cool. And the other interesting thing I find fascinating is that he's a billionaire who dropped out of school when he was 16. Got his GED, started a business in his parents' basement that became what is known as Shift 4, which is a credit card processing company, and made billions of dollars. He's also, by the way, set a world speed flying record around in 2009 while he raised money for Make-A-Wish. The guy's just, he's just out there, you know, living the Tony Stark life right now.
Yeah, hopefully he can.
With a high school dropout.
Hopefully he can bring our NASA back. I want my NASA back.
I want my NASA back.
Yeah.
You give me my NASA back.
But also, since he's got ties to Huntsville and Alabama, hopefully that's another aspect that would help bring Space Command to Huntsville.
It can't hurt.
It's rightful place.
I'm saying, can't hurt. Okay, listen, I got a couple stories here. We're going to talk about them in more detail after the top of the hour with our buddy Scott Buttram. But you may want to know this. Two things. One is there's a attack story, which it's just galling. So first of all, Cullman is a beautiful town in our listening area. I love Cullman. You know, it's just one of those towns where you go there and it's got this kind of quaint feel. The have you ever seen the Catholic? I don't know what they call it, a cathedral or not, but the twin spired cathedral in downtown Cullman is gorgeous. A lot of neat things there. Cullman is being referred to on an article on AL.com as a sundown town. What does that mean? Sundown town is an old pejorative for communities that were racist that would put up signs and tell black people, be out of town by sundown. You know, that kind of thing. There's no evidence of this, but some TikTok influencer put up a video and warned people to stay out of Cullman right after it was named as one of the, it was a Southern Living characterization of Cullman as a Hallmark town. In other words, go see it. It's beautiful. It's nice. It's a Southern Living Hallmark town. And the TikTok influencer who just couldn't help himself, got him Charlie Desi, put up a thing saying, y'all, we got drama in Alabama. Ain't nobody going to Cullman. Cullman's a sundown town. Was, is, and forever will be. That's it. Got no proof. Got no signs. Got no nothing. Just wants to say, this is the way it is, and we all know it. But he caused a viral sensation. Listen, 1819 News has a piece. They went all in on this thing, and I'm so glad. I mean, Cullman is number 10 on Southern Living's list of cutest Southern Christmas towns. I feel silly saying cute, but nonetheless, it's one of the cute Southern Christmas towns.
It wasn't your word, so you're off on that one.
Yeah. I'm reading it. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm not bound to it because I'm reading it.
Yes.
I didn't come up with that on my own. I would have said cool.
Yeah.
It's a cool Christmas town. Anyway, but they began asking for people in the area to say, have you ever seen one of these signs? No. Nobody's got one. They're just haters. And I'm just thinking, this is just, it's just gross. Go pick on somebody else. But how about leaving our small southern towns alone? Because in my opinion, when it comes to racism, no state has come further than Alabama. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all of the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number 3 on a Friday. And by the way, before I go to the phones, I got to do this. So Chef Ben from Aniana just texted in. Chef Ben from Aniana, who by the way is a true chef. I have eaten his fare and it is fine. Chef Ben from Aniana says, would you please give a shout out to Brenda and Canton? That's my mother and my son. They're riding together and they're tuned in. And then he says, great job. So salute to Brenda and Canton. We're glad you guys are Right Side Ruffians and we love Chef Ben's food. So hit me some whoop whoops on that. All right, let's get her done. So I'm going to go to the phones right now, bringing on somebody who really has his finger on the pulse of news around the state of Alabama because he's a news guy. Our friend Scott Buttram, publisher of the Trustful Tribune, on the line. Scotty Buttram, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I just passed your neck of the woods.
Nice. You heading to the mountains?
I am. I've actually been up there most of the week. I was under the weather several days, so my wife quarantined me to the cabin so I wouldn't get anybody else under the weather. I actually feel a lot better today, but my wife and daughter are out of town, so I thought, I'm going to take it. I'll go back to the cabin.
And this time, maybe enjoy it more. That's right.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you check the weather. I don't know how enjoyable it's going to be tonight.
Well, all right. Well, thanks for making time for us while you're mobile. But hey, let me. I've been doing this segment I call Home Fries. I do it periodically where, yep, I grab stories from around the area and cook up a batch of home fries and tell folks what's happening in their backyard. But
you do know I am a Right Side listener as well, right?
I do know, brother. You're not just a listener. You're like an OG ruffian. You're a Right Side ruffian, man.
I have the OG. One of the things I love that you do, and this does make it easier because I've got a lot of friends in conservative.
Uh-oh. Did we just lose him? Did we just lose him?
Because I can sit at my desk and have you playing in the background.
Hey, man, you won't believe this, but right as you were saying something, your phone cut out, and you said you got a lot of friends, and then bam, you were gone.
Oh, I'm sorry. But what I was saying is I've got a lot of friends in conservative radio, but it's not always easy to listen in to their shows. You, because you stream yours on X, formerly Twitter, I can watch that at my desk. I have you on my desk while I'm doing other things.
Nice. Well, that's perfect, and we're seeing a lot more people doing that, so thank you for the shout-out
on that.
Yeah,
it's great.
All right, hey, man, let me ask you about two stories. One of them is really, two of them really, that have gotten under my skin. One of them is 1819's got a piece, and I know you're tracking it. The idea that AL.com wants to run this cheesy story where a TikTok influencer has labeled Cullman as a sundown town. Your thoughts on that, and you might even want to tell the audience real quick what a sundown town is.
Well, sundown towns were known throughout the South, primarily in the 40s, 50s, even into the 60s in some areas. And they were towns that did not have blacks and, or generally speaking, did not have black citizens. And quite a few of them had signs up that said, don't let the sun set on you in so-and-so Alabama or so-and-so Mississippi or Tennessee or Georgia, whatever the case may be. Coleman did have a reputation back in the 50s as being a sunset town. They actually had zero black population in city limits and very few in the county. So, yeah, that did exist back in the day, over a half a century ago. Southern Living did a very nice article on some of the beautiful small-town Christmases, and Coleman was written up in that article. Got a lot of very positive attention.
Yeah.
You referred to this gentleman as a TikTok influencer. I had seen his videos before, was somewhat aware of. I don't know that I would use the term influencer, but I'm not really up on all that stuff, so I trust your terminology a little better. To me, this guy is a typical little stereotypical cartoonish character.
Yeah.
That's all he is.
Yeah.
With a lot of bitterness toward the South, a lot of bitterness toward anything biblical or conservatives. That's what I picked up from the handful of videos I'd seen from him before. That's not the issue. The fact that there is a complete moron who doesn't know what he's talking about on social media, that happens about 10 billion times a day. that's not the issue. The issue is AL.com, Alabama Media Group.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who holds themselves up as the largest media company in Alabama. And by the way, that's their claim. There's nothing to substantiate that that I've ever seen. But maybe they are. I don't know. But they are, in my opinion, the lowest class media organization, not only in the state of Alabama, but in the southeast United States. They've proven it repeatedly, and they just proved it again with this attack on Coleman. This senseless, baseless, and let's remember, without any sourcing of anything legitimate whatsoever,
yeah,
Alabama Media Group and their management made the decision to run this nobody's video, this little cartoon character stereotypes video, and trash an entire city of people. It's wrong.
It is wrong.
The things he said are baseless. They're unfounded. There's no fact. There's nothing to substantiate that. And for Alabama Media Group to pull that video, and remember, they published it once and pulled it down because it was so incredibly egregious. This is journalistic malpractice. These people are horrible human beings to make that kind of management decision. Now, Bill, you may ask yourself, why is Scott so emotional about this? We're called racist all the time in this state by people who don't know what they're talking about. Well, two of the people that live in Coleman are my son and my daughter-in-law, kind of protective of them.
Yeah.
The other two that live in Coleman are my only grandson and my only granddaughter.
Yeah.
So that's who this stereotype cartoon figure was making fun of and lying about and falsely accusing. Two of the people, four of the people that I love more than anything in this world, two of them, I'm liable to hurt you over. I mean, I ain't ever had grandbabies before. I'm kind of protective of those kids.
Oh, man. And I can hear it in your voice, and I totally get it. And there are times when vigilantism looks like a good idea.
This is a horrible. Have they issued a formal apology to the people of Coleman? Alabama Media Group done that?
Not that I'm aware of, no. In fact, the thing is, if you're going to call it a sundown town and claim it has signs up that say leave town by sunset, you think they'd show a picture of a sign. But they don't even do that.
They didn't do that. They pulled this goofball from TikTok. And by the way, they know that guy is a cartoon character stereotype. His little shtick is not even original, Phil. I don't know if you've seen him, but his little shtick is really made up of other stereotype cartoon characters.
Wow.
And because of his lifestyle, they think he hung the moon. They don't recognize the fact that this guy has some kind of mental problem if he is accusing an entire city of racism based on something 70 years ago.
And I'll say this too, two other pieces of the story are, number one, your angst towards AL.com is I would say not only well-founded because you have family members in Coleman and you're a native of Alabama, but because you're also in the news industry. And this is the kind of thing that gives credible news sources like yours, like 1819, like others, gives it all a black eye because they do crap like this.
it makes it almost so difficult to do our job when you have people out there. I mean, we hear the public all the time. Bill, you and I talk to them. We're involved. Mm. We're engaged. We know they are sick of lying media and media trying to create fake turmoil like this when it doesn't exist. But they're sick of it.
Yeah.
AL.com, on a daily basis, goes out there and proves those critics correct with this type of yellow journalism. It's disgusting. And I would say this publicly. I'm saying it on your show for the first time. Monday morning, I will be sending a letter to the Alabama Press Association Board of Directors. I will be requesting that Alabama Media Group is either censured or removed from membership. And
wow.
I think there's going to be some support on this.
Yeah.
They were given a pass. You cannot be a member of the Alabama Press Association if you are not publishing a journal, some type of newspaper or news journal. You can't be a full member. Our board, I think it was in 2021, when we knew they were going out of business, the Birmingham News,
right,
waived that rule and kept them as a Class A member.
Wow.
I will be requesting, as a member of the Alabama Press Association, that the board of directors censure, because this is twice, Bill. We haven't even talked about what they did to the Selma Times 2 weeks ago. But I will be requesting the board either censure them or remove their membership. My preference is they should remove their membership. They are not, by our own bylaws, a legitimate member of the Alabama Press Association, but our board waived the rules and allowed them to remain as a member. They've attacked a newspaper 2 weeks ago on a completely unfounded similar claim of racism. Same thing, something they dragged off social media and used to attack the Selma Times, one of the oldest, most respected newspapers in the state of Alabama. Also a member of the Alabama Press Association, also has a board member sitting on that board, and now they've done it to the entire city of Cullman, completely unfounded. They ought to be embarrassed. There ought to be a public apology from Alabama Media Group. There should be a public apology from their owners in New York, the carpetbaggers up there that come down here and steal Alabama money and at the same time trash this state. I'm sick of them.
Well, don't beat around the bush now, Scott. Tell me how you feel.
Well, I want to be casual about this and think it over, Bill. Yeah. Honestly, we have seen enough of this garbage those people that it's time to draw the line.
Yes, in fact,
I'm going to say this. I'm going to ask 1819 News to immediately apply for membership with the Alabama Press Association. Are they treated the way AL.com was treated? Will they be given that opportunity? I know that's not going to happen, which is why I'm going to be asking the board to censure or remove them from membership immediately.
I think, listen, man, I'm hot on it with you, and I appreciate you breaking that news. By the way, I did not know you were going to say all that, and I'm loving every second of it. Because in my opinion, I said this before you came on the air, but in my opinion, there is, and I've said it multiple times, there is no state in the nation that has come further on the issue of racism than Alabama. We are the state that was not only the seat of the Confederacy at one point, and the capital of the Confederacy and the root of slavery. We also became the state, though, in which the modern civil rights movement was birthed out of. We've got Rosa Parks. We got all of it right here. We got the march over the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Everything happened in Alabama. No state has come further than this state, and then to have that kind of a slight is really asinine. Hey, listen, brother.
Amen, brother. Bill, I just want to echo what you said. We got our nose bloodied in the 60s in front of the entire world. We learned from it. We got better, and we've learned to live with our neighbors, and we've learned to treat them the way they deserve to be treated, and we've treated them as equal citizens and partners in this state. I'm sick of this lying about Alabama.
Brother, you are the man. I love me some Scotty Buttram. Come on my show anytime and raise Cane. We will have fun and get her done.
I'm a folk all the way.
All right, man. I ran long. I got to go to a break, but you have a great weekend. I'm glad you're feeling better, and we will talk again soon. Keep me posted on that Monday thing, all right?
Hey, I appreciate you. Appreciate all the ruffians.
Take care. Well, that was spot on awesome. That was spot on awesome, news breaking awesome. That was exactly what I wanted to hear. Take me to a break, JP. I'm gonna go collect myself. I'm gonna go get about gave me the vapors. Just love that. AL.com. I'd love to hear your rebuttal. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades in here. That's what we're doing. Lisa from Huntsville just checked in and says, thank you for standing up for Coleman. Also, thank you for pointing out that we have come such a long way with race relations. Now, would you mind looking into why Huntsville will never be released from a ridiculous desegregation order? Because the federal government got its talons in and they can't let go. I mean, it took until just a few years ago for some of the Voting Rights Act restrictions on Alabama to be released after, you know, 50 years of doing it right. But yeah, Lisa, thank you very much. So I had an experience once when I was in the state Senate. I'll never forget this. We were passing the immigration bill because Alabama was ahead of the game. My class of the 2010 class, when we took over the state house as Republicans, we passed the first, one of the first ever statewide immigration, illegal immigration bills in the nation. A lot of it got, you know, attacked in court. Parts of it got unraveled. Parts of it are still good law. But we were ahead of our time because if you did it now, I guarantee you, you'd have a different level of sentiment. But back then we were called racist for daring to talk about illegal immigration. And I'll never forget, I was in a hearing. I was the vice chair of judiciary in the Senate. And we had a public hearing. People were allowed to, you know, to rail against us and to support us. And it was just, you know, just, it was an all call. They got to take their turns at the microphone. And one lady stood up, I'll never forget this. She stood up and she said, well, when I moved here from Texas, I came here, like my friend said, don't go to Alabama. It's like a racist state. Like, I thought, no, surely not. It's the 21st century. And now I find out it's all true. And y'all are really racist. And it got so under my skin that I literally slammed my hand on the table at the front, and the whole room looked. And I looked over at the chairman. I said, Mr. Chairman, he knew what was coming. He goes, Senator Williams. And I said, I would like to speak. He gave me the microphone. And I told her, I said, you go back to Texas and ask them about why a few weeks before that event, a few weeks ago, a man who was openly gay was beaten, tied to the chained to the back of a pickup truck and dragged for over a mile and then left to die on the side of the road. And then tell me why Alabama is the bad state. You're going to find things in every single state. But what you just described is not the state where my grandfather, my father, myself all entered the military service. That is not the state that I serve as a state senator. And I just let her have it for about a good 3 or 4 minutes. I got more slaps on the back and attaboys in the hallway that day than the entire 8 years I was in. And she had no idea what to do. And that's the point. You got to stand up and say, that ain't us. And I mean it. That ain't us. Are there problems in some places? Yes. Are there still racists in every state? Yes. Will we always live in a fallen world? Yes, until Jesus comes back. But you know what? The reality is no state has come further than the state of Alabama. I love it here and I'll defend it. Oh, Phil, you're white. You have white privilege. Shut up. The reality is this. The laws have been changed and everything is moving in a different direction. And you will not find Jim Crow in Alabama anymore. It's gone. And I know there are people that say, well, there's still racism. Of course there is. That's because there's still fallen people, but it's not systemic racism. It's not government-sponsored racism. It's not across the board. And Coleman, by the way, ain't no sundown town. I got my own rant going. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We're going to switch gears. Got some JP on sports. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I'm talking about Alabama, y'all. Alabama, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, so we're gonna lighten the mood. Maybe we'll see what he has to say, but I mean, the thing is, y'all may not realize it. JP's not only good at what he does, pushing buttons on the board and chiming in on commentary that's almost always spot on. I don't know, he said almost. I've never heard you not say something, so it's spot on. But he's like a savant on sports, all right? So, JP, you got your own radio show Saturday mornings?
Yep, on the UMP in Huntsville, 103.9 FM, 7:30 a.m. from 9 to 11 in the morning. Come check us out. You can have your game day on the TV and have us on the radio. How about that? But yeah, me and Kelsey break down the top games of the week, and we're coming towards the end of the year now. So instead of the 10-game lineup, we're starting to narrow them down on the big games. We've only got, 4 conference games this weekend? So get to go more in depth on those this weekend. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, come check us out.
All right. So we do this thing with you, though, here on Right Side. Mm-hmm. We like to call it JP on Sports. So we do it in 2 segments. First segment, for those who don't know, is going to wind up being called the 3 and Out, where you got the top 3 stories you think are out there in athletics for the time being. And then we come back after the break and we do the 2-minute warnings, where you've got 2 minutes with a buzzer sounding if you mess up. Not mess up, but if you didn't make the time
on anything you
want to talk about sports.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got a sound effect to kick this off, so go for it. JP on Sports. Okay, here we go. All right, 3 and Out, man. Start us off. What you got? What's first?
So, well, first off, I just have to say I feel bad having to follow Scott Buttram in that epic rant, but
that was
awesome. We'll see how it goes. But there's obviously, like I said, conference championship weekend, so we got the SEC championship. I can't say I correctly predicted the SEC championship preseason of Georgia, Texas, but then again, I feel like everybody predicted Georgia, Texas, so you can't really take much of credit there. But this would have been an even bigger game if Georgia had lost, because then they would have 100% needed this game to get in. But I think it's safe to say both Georgia and Texas are going to be in the playoffs, no matter if they win or lose. But still, this is going to be an exciting game of two of the top teams in the SEC. I think it's pretty hands down, people would agree, the most consistent top teams. I'll just say that. I feel like everybody in the SEC has lost badly at some point, including Georgia and Texas. But this is a rematch, too, when Georgia stomped Texas in Austin. So we'll see if Texas learned anything, how to adjust against Georgia. But Georgia's defense last time they played Texas was just, man, they gave Quinn Ewers such a hard time that they had to put Arch Manning in before the half, and then Arch Manning didn't do any better either. Oh, yeah. So they were lost. So we'll see if Texas adjusts anything and gives it a better game. But if it's anything like the first one, then the Bulldogs will be coming through with the easy SEC championship.
So I should know this, but where are they playing the game?
In Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
It is still in Mercedes-Benz, okay.
Which is pretty much a home game for Georgia.
Yeah, it is. So now that the SEC is really more like the southern half of the United States,
pretty much.
Are they going to move that game around?
I don't think so. I mean, it's been in the Georgia Dome or in Georgia ever since it started.
Yeah.
So I don't think they would change it. I love that it's – I mean, I love the stadium. I've been there for a game before. It's a perfect venue for it. Obviously, it being in Atlanta, kind of like the capital of the South almost. So I don't see them moving it, but yeah. But then again, Texas fans travel really well. I know that when Texas played at Alabama, there were many Texas fans around us when we went to the game in Tuscaloosa. There were many Texas fans around us. I was a bit surprised how well they traveled. So I would say it'll be probably like 60-40 Georgia fans.
It probably won't be
only Georgia fans. Texas fans travel, but still, that's a big advantage for Georgia having to travel and not as far.
And then there'll be the hangers-on that are there because it's an SEC championship game, not mm-hmm. just because they're Georgia Texas fans.
Yeah,
you're going to have some
too,
of those ticket
yeah.
holders that are going to show up too.
Yeah.
All right, so number one, SEC championship this weekend. What else you got?
So the ACC championship is also this weekend. And for anybody out there listening that does not want Alabama in the playoffs, then you need to be rooting for Clemson in this game because it's not 100% going to happen. If Clemson wins, Alabama's out. But I would say about 80% likelihood that if Clemson wins, Alabama will get bumped out of the playoff. Because as of now, Clemson's on the outside sitting in. When South Carolina beat Clemson in the rivalry week, a big, big win. Lenore Sellers pulled magic out of his hat almost to win that game. But now that Clemson lost that game, they're on the outside looking in. So they're not in the playoff right now. However, SMU is in the playoff with one loss. So if Clemson wins this game, they get automatic bid to the playoffs. The question is, do they keep an SMU team with 2 losses and bump Alabama out in that scenario? The commissioner said that there's a chance that doesn't happen, but I think Alabama will probably get bumped out if Clemson wins that game. So we'll just have to see. I think Clemson is probably the better team. SMU has looked really good at times, but I mean, South Carolina is really hot, and that was a close game still between Clemson and South Carolina. So I think Clemson is the better team, I would say. So as an Alabama fan, I'm a bit worried. But I still think it's going to be a good game. And I know all the Alabama haters who don't want Alabama in will be Clemson fans for the weekend. So,
we'll why'd see. You look at me?
I didn't look at you.
I didn't look at you. So, all right. So Dabo has the potential to take it to a spoiler for Alabama.
Yep, they will get the automatic. And if they lose, they're out, obviously. But yeah, they win this game, they get the automatic bid in, and potentially could ruin Alabama's playoff season. But in the scenario that Alabama is still in and get in over a two-loss SMU that lost in the ACC championship, even I, as an Alabama fan, would have to be like, okay. It's a bit ridiculous.
That was a heavy admission on your part. I mean, you even cringed when you said it.
Yeah. I mean, if Clemson blows them out, then SMU may get bumped. But other than that, it's hard to punish a team that made the conference championship, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll just have to see what their priorities lie.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see what happens then. Yeah. Third story.
Well, the Big Ten championship is probably on paper, the most competitive conference championship. Although I would say Texas, Georgia would probably be a better game because I'm not so sold on Penn State still. But the Big Ten championship is between Oregon and Penn State in Indianapolis, per usual. Oregon has been by far the best team in the country all year, undefeated, the only undefeated team in the Power Four conferences, in FBS actually, I believe. So that they're the clear favorite to win the Big Ten. I believe they're like a 11 or 12 point favorite to beat Penn State, but Penn State's number three right now. Their only loss is to Ohio State at home, but it's just tough because Penn State has not played great competition all year. I think their only ranked game that they played, well, they had an Illinois ranked win, but they were like 20th or something, and they have been out of the rankings ever since. So it's hard to count that one. And then they lost to Ohio State at home. So a lot of Penn State doubters out there. I'm not completely sold on them either. But even if they lose this game, they're probably still in. So, but on paper, 1-3 is a big time conference championship, but I'm leaning towards Oregon may win this one pretty handedly. It's just hard to bet against the Ducks because they've looked solid all year. You know? But you know, Penn State may shock some people, and that would send shockwaves. I mean, it wouldn't bump Oregon out or anything, but it would be a big shocker if Penn State can pull off that win and ruin Oregon's undefeated season, including the conference championship. But yeah, if you were to ask me, I think Oregon would have this one pretty handedly.
Undefeated season. Yep. So how many undefeateds do we have out there right
now?
One. That's it.
Oregon, yep.
Okay.
The year of chaos with
it absolutely has been chaos.
The 12-team playoff, everybody seems to be able to beat anybody. Oregon has held strong, and Oregon has been consistent all year, consistently the best team. So we'll see if they continue that. And it was going to be a rematch of Oregon Ohio State until Michigan. Man. I still can't get over that.
But I know. That's, well, they can't either.
I know. It's man, I almost felt a pit in my stomach almost of like, I cannot believe Ohio State lost that game, you know. After 4 years or 3 years straight of losing that one, and this was the year they could finally make things right, and they still don't do it and get bumped out of the Big Ten. It's like, man, I feel bad for Ryan Day.
Buckeye is supposed to bring good luck, but there was no good luck that day.
I know. And now people are calling for Ryan Day's head, even though they're what, the sixth-ranked team now? It's like, goodness gracious. How crazy is it that you're the sixth-ranked team, but they're still calling for your head to get fired, you know? Ryan Day's going to have to win the national championship, I think, to stay. We'll just see how that goes.
So which uniform is Oregon going to come to the game with?
I think they posted they're wearing all black uniforms.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I have seen them wear all black, and it is pretty cool.
Oregon's uniforms are always great. I know some traditional fans they don't like all the flashy different uniform every game. I like it. I think they look cool. The vintage one though of the O with like the Donald Duck walking through, that's my favorite stuff. That's a great uniform.
So remind me to tell you later on about my Ducks in Baghdad story.
Ducks in Baghdad.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was quite the hoot. And I'll tell you right now real quick. So the bottom line was I was attached to an Oregon Infantry Battalion.
Really?
And I had to one day we were having a staff meeting, and you know, we've been out in the weeds a lot, you know, doing stuff, combat ops all around the area, and we're kind of going through the after action on some stuff. And we got through, and I looked over, and we used to see anti-coalition graffiti. It would say "Down USA," and we had a thing. We would pull over, we would spray over it, you know, put some black paint over it, just because. Mm-hmm. And then I began noticing a trend, and I finally said something to the battalion commander. I said, "Hey, sir, just saying. I mean, maybe your guys ought to quit writing Go Ducks on the walls of Baghdad. And it was. We were driving around Baghdad and just like, Go Ducks. And
oh,
like,
my gosh.
You got to know that the insurgents were like, what does this mean? Like, Go Ducks? What is that?
That's funny.
All right. Take it to a break, dear JP. We'll come back. That's round one of JP on Sports. That was the three and out. Top three stories, all NCAA football. Now we'll come back and see what's up with the two-minute warnings. Anything he wants to talk about sports-related, 2 minutes per section. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. All right, so thank you to all of you who are watching the show streaming online. We're setting new records. We appreciate that very much. You can catch this show live on all of our radio affiliates, but certainly online at rightsidemedia.org or on YouTube or on social media like X. We got it streaming on rightside_media or my own at @SinPhilWilliams. So anyway, appreciate all of you. Thank you very much.
Hey, by the way, too, if you miss any part of the show, always check out the podcast on any podcast platform. Full show uploads will be on there as well.
Oh, yeah. All the stuff's on there. And then the podcast of the show is like 266,000 downloads now.
Yep.
Sweet. All right. Let's do round two of JP on Sports. We call this section the two-minute warning. So you got 2 minutes on whatever topic. I'll run the spectrum of sports. And I time you, and there's a buzzer, so go, man.
Well, first, we were just talking about college football. I got to talk about the 12-team playoff rankings and the controversy surrounding that now. A lot of people are claiming that there's Alabama bias and that they're going for brands over records and claiming that a three-loss team
it's should
not be
in. It's like the DEI of football.
Yeah, well, that's what people are claiming. But, you know, I just find it funny. Obviously, there's been a big push for South Carolina to be in because they've been on a crazy roll lately. They're probably the hottest team in the country. They just beat Clemson on a crazy last-minute play. So there's a big push for the Gamecocks to be in. However, what they're forgetting is, or they're choosing to ignore, is that South Carolina lost to Alabama earlier in the year. And it's funny how last year when people wanted Texas to bump Alabama out, head-to-head was the only thing that mattered. But now that they want South Carolina in, head-to-head doesn't matter. Come on. What are we talking about here? So it's been funny to me to see head-to-head go out the window in that case. But the bottom line is the 12-team playoff. We can talk if it should be 8 or 10. I would tend to agree. I think 12 is too much. But the fact of the matter is with a 12-team playoff, there's going to be at least one 3-loss team in every year. Like, that's just the fact of the matter, especially with how crazy college football is now. Anybody can be anybody. You're going to have a 3-loss team in every year. The question is just which 3-loss team is the best. And Alabama is 3-1 against top 25 teams, where Miami's 0-1. South Carolina then lost to Alabama. So it's hard to put any of those two above Alabama in that case. But still, with it being Alabama and 3 losses, and people thought after the Oklahoma loss, Alabama would be out of it. The fact that they're still in is obviously causing an uproar with college football in the college football community. But I would just say, be ready for this more. A 3-loss team is going to get in every year.
Okay, so you got a few seconds left. Pulling Alabama out of the mix just for the conversation, do you like the way things are right now?
I think 12 is too much. I think there's teams in there that shouldn't be in there. And I mean, you've got a lot of teams that haven't even beaten a ranked team yet in there. So
2 minutes. All right, let me start the clock again. Next topic. Ready? Go.
Well, college basketball has fully underway, and there's been a lot of fun matchups. Alabama just played at UNC. Auburn just played at Duke. But even before that, Auburn played in the Maui Invitational, where they beat UNC. They beat a top five Iowa State team on a last second layup by Jani Broom. They ended up winning the Maui Invitational. And then Alabama played in the NIL tournament in Las Vegas, where they lost in the championship game to Oregon just barely at the end. But then earlier this week, like I said, Auburn played at Duke, where they just came up short at the end, and Alabama blew out UNC at UNC. So both Alabama and Auburn blew out UNC in basketball. Well, isn't that a funny statement to say? Would you have thought that was the case however many years ago, that both Alabama and Auburn blew out UNC in basketball? No. So it's continuing to look. I mean, every week I feel like Alabama and Auburn are – moving up in the polls. Auburn was number two before they lost to UNC. Alabama was number nine. So they'll probably be close to like 5-6, Alabama and Auburn, and the IBOB, February 15th of this year.
The IBOB.
The Iron Bowl of basketball is looking, it continues to look like it's going to be a top five matchup potentially.
Where are they playing the IBOB?
So the first one's at Alabama. Second one will be at Auburn. The last game of the season, the regular season. So it'll be early March. I think March 1st will be the one in Auburn. So yeah, that's one that both teams definitely have circled on their calendar, and it's fun to have Alabama, you know, the Iron Bowl of basketball, be one of, you know, that the whole nation tunes into now. It's fun. I like that the state of Alabama's having the IBOB be a must-watch TV, but both teams are playing great right now. Auburn, some people thought Auburn was the number one team in the country early, with how they played in the Maui Invitational, and obviously losing at Cameron against Duke is not a loss to, you know, be ashamed about. That's a tough place to win at. They're still going to be in the mix no matter what. But yeah, both teams are in the running right now.
That's 2 minutes. All right, we got time for one more at least. Two minutes. Time. Something new. Go.
So we were talking about conference championships earlier. Army is in the conference championship game tonight. Whoop, whoop. The American Conference Championship against Tulane. This will be Army's first season in the AAC, and they're looking to come away with conference champions and potentially be undefeated, but they lost to Notre Dame early in the year. But still, one loss for Army in their first year in the AAC is really impressive. So we'll see if they can cap off this crazy year, crazy good year for Army, with a American Conference Championship trophy with their first season in it. And unfortunately, we did not get the Army-Navy matchup that we wanted in the conference championship. But still, I think it's fun that Army is in the mix, and this will be their first conference championship ever. It's crazy they went this long not being in a conference, too, Army and Navy. This is both of their first seasons in there. So we'll see if the Army Knights can do it tonight against the Tulane Green Wave.
Do you know, is Army, since they are contracted with the actual Department of the Army, are they allowed to do NIL for their players?
So I think we looked that up. I know with transfer portal it's an issue. I don't know if they're able to
they're
use
under contract.
NIL much. Yeah. I would think no off the top of my head, probably not. And the transfer portal obviously is going to be hard, because don't you have to get like senator approved, like your senator to sign off on you to go to the service academy?
You get nominated.
So but even with that, they found a way to be competitive in the new era of college football. So it's been impressive. We'll see if Army can keep playing like they have been playing years past this as well, and stay competitive.
I think it's very cool, and the Army Navy game is the following week.
Yep. And I can't remember the stadium name, but about 50-50 game in Philadelphia. I always love watching that one. It's fun.
Because Navy's had a pretty good year, too.
Yeah, they've only got two losses, so we got a one loss and two loss Army-Navy game.
Sweet. All right. And guess what? We were just short of the buzzer, but the music's playing.
There it goes.
All right, JP on sports. Good job, man. That was the two-minute warnings preceded by the three and out. We're going to come right back, jump into the next topic, Good Samaritans on trial. We'll talk about a lot of stuff, especially the breaking news right now on the Daniel Penny case. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three on a Friday afternoon, getting you guys all the way to go home time. So a few text messages to catch up on, dating way further back in the show. Brad from Laredo, Tennessee, texted in about my monologue, the DEI question. It says DEI equals dumb, empty intelligence. That fits. I like it. Ken from Athens says, Phil, this is Ken from Athens. Just heard you say that when you reach a certain age, you don't pay property taxes. Was not aware of this. I'm 80 and I still get a bill. Thanks for an answer to this. You need to go ahead and check with your revenue commissioner. I could have misspoken, but I do believe that if you are of a certain age and you check with your local revenue commissioner, just call their office and ask them, when is there an age exemption on property taxes on your personal residence? It needs to be homesteaded, is my recollection, which is just a declaration on your part to them. But check with them, Ken. That's certainly worth doing. Kim from Danville, on that thing about Coleman, said that Coleman many years ago did have a sundown town sign, but it was pulled down years ago, and they put it in the old courthouse as a display, as a form of history not like lauding it, but like the kind of thing that never should happen again kind of history. And so, yeah, okay, it's horrible that it happened back then, but it's not happening now. That's the point.
Even if there was a sign, are people really stupid enough to think that there's still sun downtowns? Like, seriously?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. How about somebody go, wait a minute, let me think. Would it be reasonable to believe there could be a sign on a public thoroughfare that warns black people to leave?
It's a story pushed by self-hating Alabamians at a certain place. So, makes sense.
It is certain things. Brian from Decatur said, myself included, I've had a lot of customers that have moved into Alabama from all over the U.S., white, non-white, etc. Absolutely all of them are astonished at how wrong the outside perception of the state really is when it comes to racism. That I believe is exactly what's happening to Coleman as well. I think it's a shame that someone with so little proof can annihilate the reputation of a good town. I myself am jealous of how quaint and adorable that town actually is compared to others in North Alabama. Yeah, so totally get it. Now, I'm not trying to correct you there, Brian, but I don't think that they were able to successfully annihilate the reputation because no one's letting them get away with it. But if they're doing it from outside the state, listen, if people will educate themselves on realities, a lot of this crap will go away. Brian, thank you very much. Adam from Athens says, Alabama does not deserve to be in the playoffs, but I really don't want Clemson in either. You know who deserves to be there? Go Vols.
Hey, I thought Vanderbilt was going to do it last week. They jumped up to a 14-0 lead, but... they still
what are. Do you do? Yay. What do you do? Dan the Man from Huntsville says, on the subject of Hegseth being confirmed, I don't know about you guys, but I'm pretty shocked that an infantryman chased pretty girls and partied when he was young. So I think it'd be awesome if the Republicans with some of his old army buddies presented them with an award for being a red-blooded American. Then look back at the Dems and ask them what they were talking about. They may have an investigation with Bill Clinton leading the charge. Yeah, listen, this is what they do. This is what they do. They can't win on the merits. So the goal is, if you can't beat them, then trash them. That's what they'll say. If you can't beat them, then trash them. I mean, there's people here in Alabama who have made an amazing amount of money just trashing people. And it's an evil way of doing things. Well, it's just politics. No, it's called a lie. I don't care if politics is involved. It's still a lie. John from Huntsville. If Army wins tonight, everybody knows they should be in the playoffs. Army.
I wish. Not going to happen, unfortunately.
I'd love to see Army make the playoffs.
Yeah. They. If Boise State wasn't doing so good, they probably would. But we'll see. If Boise State wins tonight, Army wins the next. I guess Army does play tonight, too. Yeah. We'll have to see.
Their game tonight?
Both games tonight. The Army game is tonight, and the Boise State Conference Championship game is also tonight.
So if Army wins and Boise goes down, what? What happens?
Actually, it would probably be UNLV, now that I say it. They may get in over Army, because UNLV is ranked higher than Army. So they take the highest ranked Group of Five champion winner. So it probably wouldn't be Army, unfortunately. But maybe next year.
Okay. All right. Hey, listen, we're going to switch gears now. Let me go to a new topic. I've been teasing this the entire show, and there's so much content we haven't gotten to it yet. But we're getting to it now. So, Good Samaritans on Trial. That's the name of this dipper. Good Samaritans on Trial. First of all, what does that even mean? Can somebody be legally known as a Good Samaritan? Yeah, it's not just a phrase from the Bible. It's not just a colloquialism. There are known Good Samaritan laws. Alabama has one. Like, for instance, Alabama has a Good Samaritan law that is literally related to trained professionals who are doing things in their off time. Like, for instance, if a doctor is on the bus and he sees someone having a heart attack, he can jump in and help. Now, people say, well, he has a Hippocratic oath. Well, he's also protected. If, let's say, the guy dies, even though he performs every bit of life-saving treatment he can, under code 6-5-332, doctors, dentists, nurses, rescue squad members, firefighters, even volunteer firefighters, law enforcement, if they see and intervene in an emergency situation in their off time when they're not in official capacity, they can be protected by what's known as the Good Samaritan law, meaning that they can be given basically a pass. They can be free from immunity. And that's a huge deal. Because what you don't want is a society that sits idly by and lets people suffer. You don't want to be a society where everyone is about getting the camera out and just filming and doing nothing about something that is egregious or is life-threatening happening. If it's life, limb, or property, I would love to believe people are going to intervene. And yet in today's litigious society, and in light of the amazing amount of liberal DAs that are out there who want just to put trophies on the wall, Good Samaritans have been under threat. So Alabama does have a Good Samaritan law. We do. Like I said, doctors, dentists, nurses, rescue squad members, firefighters, volunteer firefighters, law enforcement, all of them, even some public education employees. And there's other states that have Good Samaritan laws. And some are broader than others, so every state's going to have their own version. Because criminal law, there is federal criminal law, but much of the criminal law world deals with state law matters. And so unless it's a crime against the federal government or a federal provision, then it's going to wind up being state law governed. Now, what about, like, can I defend myself? I mean, what happens if, like, Daniel Penny, I mean, this guy in New York, he's on trial because he's sitting in the subway and a guy who is a known, has a known criminal history, who's schizophrenic, who was freaking out and his system was filled with synthetic drugs. He gets on and he starts screaming about how he's going to start killing people. Daniel Penny, the former Marine, who looks like he's a pretty stout guy too, by the way, he intervened. He got the guy in a headlock and took him down to the ground and held him as the guy struggled, wanting to break free to do God knows what to people that were innocent bystanders sitting on this train, the subway. Oh, by the way, the thing that gets lost in all this is he was assisted by other bystanders. And I don't know where they are in the mix, but Daniel Penny was the one who had the primary, you know, role in this. He's the one who first grabbed him in the headlock, took him down on the ground and held him until police got there. When police got there, oh, by the way, he was still alive. He died soon thereafter. So can you stand your ground? I mean, if you're being threatened, if someone's menacing you, do you have to run away? You know what's crazy is it depends on your state. Alabama's code 13A-3-23 actually provides a measure of protection for people that are just standing their ground. Like, I don't have to run away. The law provides, here's a direct quote, the law provides that a person who is justified under the statute in using physical force, including deadly physical force, and who is not engaged in unlawful activity is in any place where they have a right to be, has no duty to retreat, has a right to stand their ground. Now, the question is, has the right to be and not participating in otherwise illegal activity? In other words, if you're robbing a store and someone tries to stop you and you turn around and shoot them, you're the one committing the crime. You can't be there. You can't do that. You're not going to get stand your ground law on that. But if you're the one who owns the store and someone comes in and they say, give me all your money and point a gun at you and you shoot them, you have what is known as the stand your ground law. You also have Alabama's castle doctrine, which says that a person's home is their castle, and that castle is extended to be your home, your place of business, and your vehicle. So yes, you are allowed to stand your ground. There are circumstances where you're not. And oh, by the way, it's also different for every state. I've got one in here somewhere in my stack. Hang on a second. I got to find it. But the different states have different versions of stand your ground. And like, for instance, I think it's in New York. You're actually required to retreat. Is it New York? Maybe New Jersey. You're required to retreat. That's not stand your ground. Basically, if you can no longer retreat, then you're covered. Okay, run away, run away, run away. And I get it. Sometimes the better part of valor is not to just have the fight. But the truth be told, you shouldn't be compelled by law to run away, especially if you're protecting somebody or someone or something. Let's take a look at a few famous cases when we get back from this break. Like, we've got the Kyle Rittenhouse. Remember Kyle Rittenhouse? We've got the Kyle Rittenhouse case. We've got the Daniel Perry case, not Penny, but Perry case out in Texas. And now, of course, we got breaking news just today. As I prepared this segment, boom, breaking news happened today on the Daniel Penny case up in New York. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about what it means. Good Samaritans on trial. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower in here. We're on this topic of Good Samaritans on trial. Good Samaritans on trial. Does Alabama have a Good Samaritan law? Yeah, there are certain people under the law who, because of their expertise, if they see, we want them to intervene. If you're on a bus and somebody has a heart attack, you want the doctor who's sitting in the front seat up there to get up from his seat and come help and not be fearful of being sued. You want the volunteer firefighter who knows how to intervene in an emergency situation with an auto accident to intervene and help. You don't want to be the society that just constantly berates people who try to do the right thing. And for that matter, not only berates them, but sometimes puts them on trial, like a la Daniel Penny up in New York. I'll get to him more in a minute. But do you remember Kyle Rittenhouse? So Kyle Rittenhouse, the classic example of you should not be sued for lack of wisdom or tried for lack of wisdom. Should he have been downtown in the middle of a riot with an AR-15? Probably not. Did he go there to shoot people? No. His life was threatened. He got down there, and his defense was that he got down there and he was armed and he was with other people with the intent to stop property from being destroyed and to be there as a medic, because he had some form of training in, you know, first aid or like maybe as a, I forgot what it was, a scout or something. But anyway, he was down there ostensibly to do no harm, but also to prevent harm. And the whole night got bad. I mean, the whole night got bad. Like, what was he doing down there? I mean, kid, you're 17 years old and you got an AR-15. You went down to a riot. No wisdom there. So, but he had people that began to pursue him. People that began, like one guy hit him in the head with a skateboard. Another guy chased him and said, "If I catch you, I'm going to kill you." And tried to grab his gun. Another guy pointed his pistol at his face and Kyle Rittenhouse did not hesitate. He shot him. Rittenhouse had every right. He was trying to retreat, by the way. If you watch the videos, he was running away from the bad guys and got knocked to the ground. And when the guy pulled his pistol and pointed it at him, he shot the guy from the ground. So even if they had a stand your ground, but you have to retreat law, he met all of the criteria. The jurors, it was a 2-week long trial. Jurors deliberated for 27 hours over 4 days, pronounced him not guilty on all 5 counts. You had a Good Samaritan on trial. Now, then take a look at Texas. So for those of y'all that need a frame of reference, you think Texas, it's a red state, right? Well, Alabama is a red state, but we still got Jefferson County. We still got Birmingham, right? We still got our blue chunk. So Texas has got a blue chunk. It's called Austin. So around the same time as Kyle Rittenhouse's situation happened in August of 2020 during the summer of love, right? All the rioting everywhere around the nation. That was in Kenosha, Wisconsin, I believe. Then you have in Austin, Texas, the sympathy riots. The we weren't there and we're not having anything to do with it, but we're going to riot down here anyway riots. So a group of protesters were marching through downtown Austin, Texas, and a guy named Daniel Perry, who's an off-duty military guy from Fort Hood, he was trying to make money as an Uber driver on the weekends, and he turned right into a crowd of protesters. A guy with an AK-47. Now, let's picture this. You're a protester, and you're marching through the streets with a loaded AK-47. There's a problem. Just saying, something's up. You're a protester, not a defender, but a protester with a loaded AK-47. They surrounded Daniel Perry's car, and the guy with the AK points it in his driver's window, at which point Perry, who kept a pistol in his vehicle, pulled his pistol and shot the guy, believing that he was about to be killed. He was in his vehicle. Castle Doctrine would say that you are in your vehicle in a place where you are allowed to be. You are allowed to stand your ground. You are allowed the benefit of knowing that your castle protects you, your car in that case. And he shot the guy. Guess who got put on trial? And oh, by the way, even convicted? Daniel Perry. It took the intervention of Governor Greg Abbott to pardon him. Story that came out just a few months ago. The liberal DA of Travis County, Texas, is now seeking to have that pardon overturned by the appellate courts in Texas. Because, you know, can't have that. Well, Good Samaritan on trial, Stand Your Ground Law on trial. And now we got Daniel Penny. When I get back, I'm going to give you the lowdown on what has happened just today and where does it go from here. What are we going to see on Monday? Because the case against Daniel Penny just took a major, major turn this afternoon while I was on the air. So we're going to give you the latest, and I'll try to give you a little bit of Lawyer Williams speaking to the situation. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I am talking about Alabama, y'all. It's where I'm sitting right now. Alabama. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, I got to make an announcement. I forgot to say this earlier in the show. If I don't say it now, JP's going to be mad. But no, I mean, I'm pretty stoked about this. So y'all may recall that the Right Side Radio is just one part of the overall company, Right Side Media. It's just one of our things. So Right Side Radio, of course, the hub of what we do. It's how we got started. But we have now got the written word, which gets published. You know, our op-ed goes out every week and gets published all over the state. And, oh, by the way, we now have brand new podcasts for you. So we've had Right Philosophy and Right Click that have been ongoing now. Video podcasts have been ongoing now for quite a while. We just added this week the Liberty Minute with former Navy SEAL Jared Hudson, which is great. It's up right now. It's been posted since yesterday. You can find it on our YouTube or at rightsidemedia.org. But our fourth podcast contributor starts Sunday. So Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock. We're dropping in two episodes, right? Two? We're dropping in two episodes of the brand new Controversial Mom podcast. So Emily Jones, who started Moms for Liberty in Alabama, she's doing one with us called The Controversial Mom. I love the title, first of all. And she is, which is crazy because what she's doing is nothing controversial unless you're woke. But they think she's controversial, so we're going to go with it. So right now, The Controversial Mom kicks off with Emily Jones on Sunday at 5. And you can always find all the episodes on our website, rightsidemedia.org, or on our YouTube channel, Right Side Media. Just go check it out. Good stuff, man. I'm pretty stoked. That's right now we have four video podcast lines. We have the audio podcast of the show. We have the radio show and the written word. Whoop, whoop. We're getting some stuff going on.
And streaming.
Oh, thank you. Which has been really up today.
Yeah. I appreciate everybody tuning in. And if anybody's watching and has not followed or subscribed to us on our platforms, please go ahead and do so. We'd appreciate that a lot.
It actually lets our business grow because the platforms all have markers you have to hit. So we're going to hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube very soon. And we'd love for y'all to be there. I would love to know who's the number 1,000. That would be cool. We might have to have a t-shirt or something for number 1,000.
We have to do that. It's a good idea.
Mm. But you're not allowed to unsubscribe and then jump back in to be 1,000. You can't do that. All right, let's go back to the Good Samaritan on trial. So Daniel Penny, what happened? Well, we got word, I think it was yesterday or this morning perhaps. I've got a piece here I pulled from Fox. Yeah, it was yesterday, Dateline yesterday, that the Daniel Penny trial, which had gone to the jury this week, I think they finished closing arguments on Monday, went to the jury. The jury asked to review three pieces of evidence. That's not unheard of. It was what they were calling to review, though, that was interesting. They wanted to see the exhibit. It was People's Exhibit 36A, which was an interview that Daniel Penny, after intervening on the train with a schizophrenic, drug-addled guy was screaming that he was going to kill people. And he intervenes and holds a guy in a headlock. The guy later died. Not then in the scene, but he later died. During his trial, you had competing expert testimony, which is not uncommon to have the battle of the experts. But the competing expert testimony was, number one, on the prosecution side, they said that the chokehold was the reason for the death. Whereas the defense side had a separate medical expert who said, absolutely not. The fact that he was still alive when the police got there is a clear indication the chokehold was not the cause of death. It was all the drugs in his system and perhaps the stress of the moment. He basically flaked out and his heart gave out. Okay. Yay, nay. People's Exhibit 30A, 36A, the jury wanted to see the interview that the police did with Daniel Penny. Well, he came in as an interview thinking he was just a witness. And he was. And he waived his Miranda rights. And he sat down with the NYPD and they had a very friendly conversation. They were even joking. One of the guys was even a former Marine, like he's a Marine. They kind of did the Semper Fi thing. And they didn't inform him at the time that Neely had died. He had no idea. He just went on to tell him. He was talking gibberish on the train. These guys are pushing people in front of trains and stuff. And, you know, got all these deaths in the subways. And I just thought, you know what? I can't let this happen. He's like, I'm going to kill somebody. He said, I'm going to go to prison forever. I don't care. This was what the guy said that died. He said, so I just like grabbed him from behind. And the detectives were like, huh, really? Oh, wow. Well, the jury wanted to see that again. Because you look for what's known as the then present sense impression of the witness. What's that mean? The then present sense impression. That was what was his mental state at the time? What were his impressions of the moment? And so I'm sure they were looking at that again. People's Exhibit 12, they wanted to see that. That was the video that some bystander took of what was happening, which clearly showed that there was an out-of-control situation, that Penny intervened, and that other bystanders helped. And then they wanted to see People's Exhibit 34, which was where it showed the points of view from the various officers, police cams or body cams, and just, you know, what was happening, and officers who were trying to resuscitate Neely, saying he's got a pulse, but he's not breathing. Different things were happening. The jury wanted to see it all. Today, the jury came back right as I went on the show. The jury came back and said they were deadlocked. Deadlocked. They could not come to a unanimous decision as to the primary charge of manslaughter. So we have a primary charge of manslaughter, and the jury is unable to reach a unanimous verdict. Now, it's not uncommon for that to happen, and the judge will give them what's known as an Allen charge and send them back again to review and to try again. But in this case, apparently, the prosecution saw the handwriting on the wall, and the prosecution went ahead and moved the court to drop the manslaughter charge. They knew they weren't going to get there. And the judge dismissed, while I'm on the air today, the judge dismissed the manslaughter charge against Daniel Penny. What remains that I know of is one charge of criminally negligent homicide. What is that? Criminally negligent homicide. Well, first of all, being negligent removes an intent piece. It's a lesser crime, but it still involves manslaughter or homicide. And so where we are right now is the jury has been dismissed for the weekend, told to come back on Monday. And the Good Samaritan, Daniel Penny, is going to be sitting there waiting to find out whether they're going to determine that Daniel Penny's actions were more than just a bad mistake, that they were a complete disregard for someone else's security and well-being, and that he had a complete failure to consider the ramifications of his actions. Now, every state has their own version, all right? Every state does. An example of this would be like, you're out there celebrating, you know, at 4th of July in an area where there's high-rise apartments and you're shooting your weapon in the air to celebrate and someone dies on a balcony. That's criminally negligent. You shouldn't have done it. You're driving really fast through a parade or something like that and you run somebody over. Potentially criminally negligent. You leave a child in an unattended car in a hot weather and they die of asphyxiation or heat stroke in the car. Criminally negligent. So did you have a reckless disregard for others? Did you in some way violate the what would be known as the reasonable man standard? A reasonable man in a similar situation would not have done that thing you did. We'll find out. That's going to be on Monday. Now, we do have one other piece of this because the plot has thickened. Yeah, there's a Castle Doctrine defense. Not Castle Doctrine, but yeah, there's a Stand Your Ground defense potentially. Yeah, there's a Good Samaritan. And there are Good Samaritan laws, which he may or may not have qualified for under New York law. But now what we also have is not only the criminal trial, but we just found out that the father of the deceased has now filed civil suit against Daniel Penny. That just happened. Yesterday afternoon, the father of the victim at the center of the fatal New York City subway, according to the AP, has sued the defendant Daniel Penny as the jury still deliberates his case. Jordan Neely's father, Andre Zachary, filed the suit Wednesday against Marine veteran Daniel Penny. He accuses him of negligence, assault, and battery, which led to the death of his unarmed 30-year-old son. How about this? His unarmed 30-year-old son, Daniel Penny, was also unarmed. His unarmed 30-year-old son was out on bail, and he shouldn't have been after... He walked up and punched an elderly woman in the face? So he's a violent individual who jumps on a train, completely addled by drugs. He's schizophrenic. Where were you, Dad? Where were you? Where were you when your son was roaming the streets out of his mind, needing assistance, but now you want money? That's what's happening there. Shame on the lawyer who filed that suit. But right now, I don't give that civil suit a whole lot of credence, except that it's in New York. So there's that. I think that if it were here, he'd have an uphill climb. He may still have an uphill climb in New York too, I suspect. But nonetheless, Daniel Penny, his days in court are not quite done.
Yeah, and I kind of just add to, I know you talked about this earlier of the defense talking about how it was not likely the death was caused by the chokehold. I've talked about this before. I've done MMA fights and did jiu-jitsu for quite a while. I've been in many chokeholds, done many chokeholds. I find it very unlikely that, or let me just put it this way. Anybody who thinks that somebody can die from a chokehold, it's really unlikely for that to happen. I mean, the main point is to just cut off consciousness from the artery that goes through your neck to your brain, cut off blood circulation. It's the only way they can really die from that is you break his neck. And that's if he was alive when the police got there, then yeah. Obviously that didn't happen. I think the better likelihood is, like you said, he was on drugs, probably the adrenaline, whatever. It was not the chokehold. I mean, anybody who has any sort of idea about chokeholds or whatever knows, like, it's very unlikely for somebody to die from a chokehold, let's put it that way, especially if he was alive. If he's going to die from a chokehold, he's not going to be alive when the police get there. So it's just crazy to me that people put that as, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. I'll say it that way.
And here's the other part, but great input. And here's the other part of the story. What should he have done? Just sat there and let somebody get punched in the face? Just sat there and let the ladies and the kids that were on the train with him, be at risk of who knows what, maybe even death? I mean, should he have just sat there? And oh, by the way, don't you want to live in a society where the strong guy will intervene when the bully tries to take, you know, innocent lives or innocent, you know, create harm? I mean, don't we want to live? And I'm not talking about vigilantism, and I'm not talking about, you know, the streets of Tombstone back in the 1800s. I'm not talking about that. But even in the streets of Tombstone back in the 1800s, they cared. And if we want to be a society where the Good Samaritan goes on trial all the time for daring to intervene when innocent people are at risk, well, then what kind of society are we? That's where we are right now. Good Samaritan on trial. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back. I got a phone call coming, I suspect, and I got some text messages to catch up on. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades, saving the world one soundbite at a time, making common sense like a superpower, giving you all the truth you can put on a bumper sticker. Look, I got them all in at one time. Real quick before I go to the phones, John from Huntsville has the grades in. He says, JP, you get a C-. Wow, JP. JP, you get a C- for your extremely disappointing performance for defending the playoff committee's decision to put Alabama in the playoffs when the entire world knows that there's no argument for Alabama to be in the playoffs. Phil gets an A++. I'm not trying to gloat. Phil gets an A++ for his spectacular performance, which means today's winner is obviously the magnificent Scott Buttram with a perfect A++. Congratulations. By the way, JP, expect a bunch of texts from me in the morning explaining how there doesn't need to be a playoff committee.
Hey. The truth hurts, John, unfortunately.
I'm going to tell you right now, too, his grades are spot on for Scott Buttram.
That's true. I would agree Scott Buttram will be today's winner.
Give his applause on Scott Buttram. That deserves it, man. It's Thank you. Scott Buttram, if you're still listening, man, you win the internet today. Let me go to the phones real quick. Jeff Rowe from Indiana. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
You think John grades on a curve?
I think the grades are rather subjective. What do you think?
I believe it might.
Hey, by the way, what time did you get home last night? You had a late one, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I only got home about 11 o'clock. I sit in Falkville for about 4 hours, you know. Sometimes, you know, I hate to say it, but I think Pete Buttigieg could probably run this company better.
Well, you know, Mayor Pete's been out there working on them racist roads he keeps talking about, so I don't know what you would have gotten done. But where are you at right now? You better off?
Right now, I'm in Tennessee crossing the Duck Scenic River.
There you go. All right. Well, what do you think about this this news we've got about Daniel Penny, the Good Samaritan on trial up in New York?
Well, I think that the only person that's criminally negligent in Jordan Neely's death is the city of New York.
Yeah.
They're suing the wrong person because I thought this cashless bail stuff was supposed to be for nonviolent criminals, why was he out and being schizophrenic to boot? Shouldn't he put on some kind of a hold or something? And if you know, you just go out there and just punch an old woman in the face and everything, and then they let you right back out to go do it again.
Yeah,
Daniel Penny didn't kill him. The city of New York did.
Well, great point. That's a great point. Not only that, but now his father, where was he before, is now suing Daniel Penny, wanting some money out of him.
That's all he wants is some money out of it, because apparently he didn't, you know, he would have been trying to get him some help and stuff if it had been a caring father, as he's trying to pose himself to be now.
Well, the whole situation's a mess. I think what I'm sick of, and I think what a lot of people around the nation are sick of, is the idea that you're not allowed to defend yourself or defend others around you. You're not allowed to take a stand. You're not allowed to say anything when people burn whole city blocks. You're not allowed to say boo about the fact that your car gets surrounded in the middle of a riot and people threaten your life. You're just supposed to just take it. And I'm pretty sure that's by the wayside now. And Daniel Penny and Kyle Rittenhouse and Daniel Perry out in Texas, I mean, these are folks who were clearly indicated that you can get put on trial for being a Good Samaritan, or just, for that matter, defending yourself.
Yeah, the guy in Texas now, when you got somebody come up and pull the AK-47 in your face, do cops have some kind of special power that if you point a gun at a cop, he's pretty much going to shoot you? And does cops have more leeway to self-defense than a normal person? Because if that's the case, you know, maybe we can just deputize everybody, and then everybody can just...
I think what they tried to put him on trial as someone who was looking for trouble anyway, who went down there looking for trouble, and that his army training was what gave him the ability to recognize when it wasn't really a threat. But I don't know. An AK in your face is a threat. I don't care who you are. I don't care how much training you got.
Yeah, that's what I say. You walk in my house at night unannounced, and you better flee or... they're going to be carrying you out. So
no doubt.
You know, that's just the way it is. That's the way it should be.
Man, it's exactly the way it should be. Hey, listen, man, we got 20 seconds for the music start playing, but you be safe on the road, and we'll talk to you next week, all right?
Have a good weekend, Phil.
All right, brother. Take care. Jeff Rowe from Indiana. All right, listen, we have an amazing audience, and you guys just wowed us today. We kept sitting here watching the numbers go up as you guys were watching us online and doing all that. And don't forget, the latest podcast, The Controversial Mom, hits the airwaves on Sunday afternoon. You can already get Right Click, Right Philosophy, and The Liberty Minute with former Navy SEAL Jared Hudson. And this show. And you guys are the reason why we do it. I mean, we could talk into a can all day long. Ain't nobody listening. What are we doing? Y'all are the reason why we do it. You're an amazing audience, and we love you and we appreciate you. Now, do not forget, oh, by the way, there's more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Y'all stay in the fight. We'll see you next week.